Each weekday, a member of the community is invited to Coffee at KYUK to discuss news and information relevant to Bethel and the Kuskokwim Delta. Sometimes light, sometimes serious, Coffee at KYUK is where our community connects.
Hello, 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 up and down the Cusco. I'm also shouting out to the Yukon and the Coast. Grady Deaton here, Coffee at KYUK. My coffee is obviously pumping through my veins already. I had a slow start this morning. I hope you are excited to face your day. I am excited to arrange this call here on Coffee at KYUK because joining me is our own Katie Basil. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Grady.
And go ahead and take the show away because I'd like you to introduce your guest.
Great. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I'm excited to have Don Reardon on the show with us. Don grew up in Akiak, Kosciuszko, and Bethel. He's an Alaskan author, a professor at the University of Alaska Anchorage, a produced screenwriter, a poet, and my friend and former high school English teacher. Good morning, Don. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning, Katie, and good morning, YK Delta. I miss all of you.
We miss you, too. How are things in Anchorage?
Oh, pretty quiet. Everybody's still hunkering down, which I think is smart.
That's definitely a good thing. So it's National Poetry Month, and you are a poet. Would you mind opening with a poem?
Sure, I am happy to. This one is a shout-out to Bethel and a good friend out there, and I can explain a little bit of it afterwards, but I think I'll just share it first. It's called Thunderbirds and Thinking Small. Kevin sends me a photo he knows I will love. The two of us have whittled away many summer suns, speaking of these creatures, the monsters of his culture. The creature that appears on my phone, in my hand, ancient Yupik art on seal gut. Imagine, I reply via text, digital smoke signals, ones and zeros across infinite mountains, what it was like, birds that could carry away a caribou, a whale, a hunter in his kayak. It's funny how we never hear about the raptors in the time of the megafauna soaring above mammoth carcasses, snarling simtar cats, cave bears, dire wolves. I picture them, these enormous avians, feathered Cessnas with harpoon talons. Kevin brings me back to Earth, to our time, and with his joke, reminds me how my white boy brain has much to learn. He writes, or maybe we're thinking in the wrong direction. Maybe it's a miniature caribou roaming the tundra, small enough to be eaten by ptarmigan. And that's Thunderbirds and Thinking Small.
Ooh, I love that. Can you tell us who or what inspired that?
Yeah, that's about my good buddy Kevin Morgan, hello, Kevin, if he's out there listening today. He sent me a photo from the Bethel Museum of some art on a seal gut drum or something. I can't remember what it was. And it was of like one of the Thunderbirds from back in the day. And that got me thinking about just like those enormous birds and how they could have been flying around with all the other creatures. And then he pointed out, or maybe it was really, really small time. really small caribou, and just always that perspective, you know. I think like Yupik perspective really can teach a lot of people how to think differently, think smarter even, I think.
Right. I like that visual twist at the end. So anyone who follows you on social media knows that you have an annual practice of writing one poem a day during National Poetry Month, which is April. How is writing poetry this April different in light of current events?
Oh, man. How is this April different for everybody, right, right now?
Absolutely.
I don't know. I think the poetry is offering a little bit of a catharsis and a new way to think about everyone's situation and how everyone's feeling about this. For me personally, it's a way for me to deal with kind of some of my maybe political angst and also just concern for Alaska and for humanity. I'm always worried more about people. I think that's part of kind of growing up out in rural Alaska and kind of coming, having kind of a village perspective of how important community is over the individual. So I think like that's definitely influenced my poetry, and it makes it seem like I can't just write a completely silly poem for no reason now. Like there's a little weight to what I'm trying to do, I think. So that makes it a little tougher too.
Right, especially in these times. So in 2011, you published The Raven's Gift, and that's a novel that centers around an epidemic that hits the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. What inspired you to write The Raven's Gift?
I'd been teaching out there. I went to high school out there, elementary school, and I was starting to kind of, I think I was becoming angry at what I kind of considered the disparity of wealth. And I was mad that I had friends who were, you know, who had essentially gotten sick from third world diseases like tuberculosis, and that there were still honey buckets, and that Alaska had so much wealth. I think some of that was building up in me. And so I wanted to write a novel about how I felt like Alaska was being left behind, rural Alaska was being left behind. But I needed to put that in the context of another story. So really it's a metaphor for how I felt the situation in rural Alaska was deteriorating, but I wanted to find hope in that. And so that was around the time I wrote that, around 2005 or six. When they're really looking at bird flu, maybe it was 2008. I'm bad with years and math. looking at how bird flu would maybe come to Alaska first if it hit anywhere, and we weren't ready. And so then I started researching that, and then that really got my mind going. What if another pandemic hit? And that's the thing, is Alaska's been through this before, and if anyone knows this, it's rural Alaska, and especially southwest and western and northern Alaska. Like the pandemics that hit here were devastating. And so, and I had grown up hearing those stories from the elders. And so that definitely influenced me. And so that's what inspired me to write it, was to kind of tell a story that would shed light on the disparity of wealth, but also the richness of culture, which the YK Delta has, that there is the disparity of that too. People are enormously wealthy in that they have a culture that's still so powerful.
It's interesting that the epidemic was kind of a metaphor for these other issues, but now we actually find ourselves in an epidemic. And I've seen a lot of people referencing your novel on social media in the context of the coronavirus. And some say you've predicted the future, but my argument is that you've described just one possible and devastating scenario. Do you have an alternate scenario that you could predict?
When this started to become a reality, I really regretted even writing the book, because I have so many friends out there and people that I know who've read it, and I didn't want that vision to be in their mind of what bad could transpire. And that was some of the bad that had happened before. And instead I wanted people to see a new vision. And I think that's what we're seeing. You know, people were out in rural Alaska, were smarter than places that are still just, you know, open for business and flaunting their, I don't know what you'd call it, in the face of this invisible enemy. And instead you saw the villages taking action. And then I was just super proud to see even friends of mine who are now leaders out in those villages saying, like, we're shutting down, where no one comes in, and establishing those rules and protocols. And so for me, I think the alternate scenario is what's happening, is that people are, I think, the mentality of community safety over the individual is paramount, and that people are practicing that. That's the alternate scenario. I think we really can minimize the damage of this if people practice social distancing and, you know, go to those extra lengths. And I know how hard it is too, how, you know, like the rules coming out of of the CDC and everywhere, wash your hands, well, that's hard when you don't have running water. But I can just, I know that there's people out there just working to, you know, go get water and bring it to people. And so, yeah, I think the alternate scenario is what's happening. And I think people are resilient and strong and are going to do okay.
Yeah, it has been really incredible to see communities out here and how quickly those travel restrictions came down. I mean, even before, you know, the governor was acting. So,
yeah, that really, really made me proud. And to see, you know, like tough decisions like basketball things and events like that get canceled because people knew it wasn't safe. You know, like that's hard. Those are hard decisions to do and not popular a lot of times, but the people know. You know, like the, everyone out there, their relatives are descendants of people who survived this stuff, and they have that. I think that that's in the blood to survive it, like the intelligence to get through it.
Absolutely. So it's been a few years since I read The Raven's Gift, but one of the things I loved while reading it were the descriptions of some of the familiar characters and then trying to figure out who they are. So I just want to read one example of that. This is when the characters who are teachers, they have a job interview with the local school district. Gary Brellin, the personnel director, a handsome, fit runner type in his late 40s, looked the two of them over, tugged at his earlobe for a moment, and scanned their resumes one final time. So, Don, is that my dad that you're describing?
Is that your dad? Well, he's not in his late 40s now anymore, is he?
No, he's not.
Yeah, I think there were definitely places where I was giving a shout out to people that I admired, and yeah. So, and you're even woven in the story, I think, a little bit with that, because he does mention having his kids out there.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's always fun. But then there are people that were just I completely made up, and then I know there's plenty of folks that think that's them, and I'm okay with that as long as they're happy about it. But if anybody's mad about it, it's not you in the book.
Did you have any negative reactions at all to characters or the book from the region?
No, thankfully, and I, you know, in I fictionalized the villages. Because I did not want anyone saying, like, hey, that's my uncle, you know, or doing anything like that. But there are definitely some names and people who are there. The characters that I really, the admirable qualities of them come from people that I really admired and loved.
Mm. Yeah, I think everyone I've talked to has just really loved the book and enjoyed reading so many things that we can relate to. On that note, would you share another poem with us?
Sure. Let's see. I'll share one that's, let's see, where did I go? I had everything ready to go. This one would be, related to, this is one that I wrote a week or so ago for the kind of, for everybody who's doing the jobs that we, maybe aren't appreciating enough. And this is called For the Essentials. There will be no medals for you, no dinners in your honor, no book offers, movie deals, or dramas capturing your sacrifices, your sweat and toil for a nation hungry for chocolate ice cream and extra toilet paper. Essentials we purchase, delivered, unboxed, stocked, bagged. No pension for you to lose, no sick leave, no funeral fund or insurance or anything. Know this, you heroes. Your selflessness does not go unnoticed. And after the cleanup on Isle America is over, we will find a way to give you thanks you've earned.
Mm, the cleanup on Isle America. Wow.
Yeah, every once in a while I'll have kind of a line that's okay, and the rest of the poem could probably get thrown out. But, yeah, the cleanup on Isle America is good.
No, I appreciate that. I think it's so important to remember gratitude for not only health workers and medical professionals, but, you know, people working in grocery stores and maintenance workers.
Oh, yeah, for sure. There's just there, and that's kind of the play as the essentials. You know, we think of the essentials as the things that we need from the store. And then I see it now as just those people that are doing those jobs that are keeping us safe and then also keeping us, you know, fed.
Alive, yeah. They're really
and alive, yeah. Keeping the lights on, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. We just have a few more minutes. Would you mind sharing another poem or two?
Yeah, sure. Let's see. I'm always playing around with words. Let's see. I'll share this one, see if we have time for another one. But so it's related to time. So it's called On Time. On time, they say, time goes faster. With time, there isn't enough time in the day. Just in time, this time. And you don't know the time of day before your time, because time is valuable, is money, is now. About time, there isn't enough time on your side when it's time to go.
I feel like that was a nod to me, because I was always late for your class.
That is true, you were. Do you have time for a moment for another one?
Yes, yeah. Please.
All right. This one's a shout out. This is an older poem. I kind of played with it yesterday and revised it a little bit. A nod out to when I was just a little kid in Akyak. And it's called Eskimo Baseball. I remember when Benny stole my baseball glove. He and the other boys raced off down the muddy boardwalk, laughter fading with distance. My soft leather mitt clutched in his hand. They probably had never touched a baseball glove before that cool spring day. The irony didn't occur to me then as I choked back the tears. I was the only white boy in the village, Pasuk, the only left-hander, too.
That's one I remember. I've heard that. That's beautiful.
Yeah, that was one from a long time ago. I just modified it a little bit. They did give me my baseball glove back, though, and then we did become friends. So
nice,
there was just
nice.
That transition period for me as a kid. But, man, I miss everyone out there, and appreciate the chance to speak to you today, and thanks for having me on. And I just hope everybody will be safe and well, and yeah.
Thanks. Thanks so much, Don. And before you go, so today Don will be on Talk of Alaska as well at 10 a.m. Don, any notes on that show, what we have to look forward to?
I think that'll be pretty fun. There might be a song that's going to get played, that lyrics I wrote and your husband Paul Basil is going to play. We're going to do an early advanced recording of that. He's still a little embarrassed about it. He's not dialed in his way he wants it to, but it's I think it's amazing, and it'll be cool. And Quinn Christopherson, who won the Tiny Desk Conference Tiny Desk Concert on NPR, is going to be on as well, and a few other folks. I think it'll be a good time.
Oh,
try to cheer up people in this, you know, make people happy and talk a little bit about power of art.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Don. So tune in at 10 a.m. on KYUK 640 a.m. to catch Don again on Talk of Alaska. Great day.
All right. Katie, after that at 11, some student poetry following Talk of Alaska. So pay attention to that right at the top of 11 for National Poetry Month. And that's about all the time we have. So thank you, Katie, for that excellent time you spent with your former English teacher. That was great stuff.
Thanks, Grady. Have a great day.
You too. And don't forget to be awesome to each other.
A member of the community is invited to coffee at KYUK to discuss news and information relevant to Bethel and the Kuskokwim Delta.
Sometimes light, sometimes serious, Copyat KYK is where our community connects.
If you'd like to suggest a guest or arrange to be on with us yourself, contact us at coffee@kyuk.org or call 543-3131 today.